All right, we're back to the director's report. So, director, please direct.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I want to add my thanks to Tim and Manley for coming down. We really do appreciate this. Despite what some may think, we probably share more things than we disagree with. So we look forward to continuing dialogue with North Carolina Wildlife Federation and certainly appreciate their acknowledgement of an outstanding officer with our Marine Patrol, and congratulations to Officer Year as well. So I'd like to bring up Steve Poland now to give you an update on the development of an issue paper regarding hook and line modifications. This was something that we took away from the last meeting and said that we probably wouldn't have a final product, which is true. But we do have an update, and I wanted Steve to go over that.
Thank you, Steve. We're pretty close, though. But we'll bring it to you in February. So, good afternoon, commissioners. At your last meeting, you asked the division to prepare an information paper on requiring the use of circle hooks and bent barbs on treble hooks for the recreational fishery in North Carolina. In response, the division put together an internal work group to work on the matter. The work group consists of division staff from the director's office, fishery management, habitat enhancement, license and statistics, and Marine Patrol. So trying to cover all aspects of any potential regulations that you guys might choose to move forward with. So far, we've met twice. We've reviewed all the available literature to us on the effects of hook trauma on the survival of fish, not only circle hooks, but also J-hooks, treble hooks, and any information that's out there. In general, the literature does support the use of circle hooks for reducing hook trauma to fish, or at least the instance of deep hooking of fish, so hooking fish in the gills or in the esophagus or even in the stomach. However, there's very few studies on fish species that occur in our waters. A lot of these circle hook studies have either been on freshwater fish or snapper grouper species or highly pelagic fish. But however, there are a few studies out there like Red Drum. A few studies have occurred in the state of North Carolina as well as other regions, South Atlantic and Gulf, as well as some studies on speckled trout and striped bass, and all those studies tend to support the use of circle hooks for reducing hooking trauma. We also investigated the availability of hooks in the industry and the standardization of these hooks from the industry. Hook manufacturers do not standardize their hooks by size, even within manufacturers and within different lines or styles of hooks by one manufacturer. I'll touch on this a little bit later when I give my South Atlantic Council update, but the South Atlantic Council has moved forward with a circle hook requirement, and the Council's way to deal with this issue was just to require the use of circle hooks regardless of size. I know Chris Batsavage will also speak to some circle hook requirements when he gives his ASMFC update for sharks and striped bass, but it seems like the general trend among management agencies is to require the use of the gear and not necessarily require it after a certain size given this lack of standardization. And with that, we're on track to provide this information to you at the February meeting. It'll be an information paper and a PowerPoint. And really with that, that concludes my update. So if you have any questions or any further insight on the intent or anything like that, okay. I'd be glad
any
to
questions from
answer.
Anybody? Okay, I think we're good. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank All you.
Right. All right. Thank you, Steve. I'm going to turn it over to Chris Batsavage, who's going to give you an update on the happenings with both the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission and the Mid-Atlantic Fishery Management Council. And we have meeting summaries provided in your briefing materials.
Thanks, Steve. Good afternoon, everyone. In your brief materials, you'll find the meeting summary from the ASMFC annual meeting that was held last month up in Newcastle, New Hampshire. It's a pretty busy meeting. You can probably tell from the summary. I'm just going to hit the highlights as I normally do. Start off with Atlantic Menhaden. The Menhaden Board and the full ASMFC found the Commonwealth of Virginia to be out of compliance with Amendment 3 to the Atlantic Menhaden FMP for not fully and effectively implementing and enforcing the Chesapeake Bay reduction fishery cap. ASMFC previously recommended to indefinitely postpone any or table any considerations of noncompliance as long as the landing stayed below the Chesapeake Bay reduction cap, but the cap was exceeded back in September. The board noted that implementation of this measure is necessary to achieve the conservation goals and objectives of the FMP, to maintain the Chesapeake Bay marine environment, and to assure availability of ecosystems resources on a long-term basis. The commission will forward the noncompliance letter to the U.S. Secretary of Commerce of its determination if they haven't done so already. I think it's supposed to be sometime this week. The Secretary of Commerce then has 30 days to determine if Virginia is out of compliance based on the Atlantic Coast Fisheries Cooperative Management Act. If found out of compliance, then Virginia's Menhaden fishery will close via a moratorium, and this will include Virginia's bait fishery as well. Next up is striped bass. Striped Bass Management Board approved Addendum 6 to the Striped Bass FMP. The addendum reduces both the commercial quotas and recreational harvest by 18% to end overfishing and rebuild the stock. The management measures put in place for the recreational fishery include a 28 to 35-inch slot limit for the ocean, along with the existing one-fish bag limit. And in the Chesapeake Bay, it implements an 18-inch minimum size limit and drops the bag limit to one fish for the recreational fishery. However, states may submit alternative regulations through conservation equivalency to achieve at least an 18% reduction in total removals. The addendum also requires the mandatory use of non-offset, non-stainless circle hooks when fishing with natural bait to reduce release mortality in the recreational striped bass fishery. Education and outreach to garner support for the use of circle hooks is definitely needed to meet these management goals. And the board acknowledged that enforcement will be a challenge, but hope the requirement results in anglers adopting the use of circle hooks for conservation benefits for the fish. States must implement the mandatory circle hook requirements by January 1st of 2021, and all other provisions of Addendum 6 must be implemented by next April. And just as a reminder to the commission and anyone listening in, direct ASMFC management of striped bass in North Carolina only applies to fish caught in the Atlantic Ocean. These management measures do not apply to the state's estuarine striped bass populations. Okay, next up is weak fish. The Weak Fish Management Board reviewed the Weak Fish Stock Assessment Update, which included data through 2017, and also included the revised recreational harvest estimates from the MRIP survey. The stock assessment determined that the weak fish stock is still depleted and total mortality is above the threshold. The update did show a slight increase in spawning stock biomass and total abundance, but it's still well below the spawning stock biomass threshold. The board took no further action for management since the existing measures are already very restrictive, and for the commercial fishery that's a 100-pound trip limit and a one-fish bag limit for the recreational fishery. So further management is not likely unless the stock recovers or discards become a persistent issue. What's driving this is weak fish availability in North Carolina is relatively high compared to the rest of the range. They're either very rare or sporadic. So it kind of lines up with the stock assessment results. Next is spot and croaker. The South Atlantic Board approved draft addendum 3 to the Atlantic Croaker FMP and draft addendum 3 to the spot FMP for public comment. These addenda were initiated to incorporate updates to the annual traffic light analyses applied to both species and consider changes to the management responses. The management responses considered in the addenda were developed to reduce fishing impacts on spot and croaker during periods of low abundance. These options include bag limits for the recreational fisheries and percent landings reductions through seasons, trip limits, or size limits for the commercial fishery. Public hearings will be held for these addenda. I think they should be coming out with a news release here this week or next. There's one scheduled in Wilmington on December 5th, but there will also be a public hearing webinar, and written comments will also be accepted. And then the board will take final action on the addenda at their February meeting. Next up is Coastal Sharks. The Coastal Sharks Management Board also voted to require the use of non-stainless, non-offset circle hooks in state waters for the recreational shark fishery when using natural bait. However, anglers using flies and lures are exempt from having to use circle hooks. These measures are consistent with Amendment 11 to the Highly Migratory Species FMP, which requires the use of circle hooks in the recreational shark fishery when using natural bait. The measures also include fishing for smooth dogfish, since they're also managed under ASMOCs and Highly Migratory Species Coastal Sharks FMP, and is consistent with the federal waters regulations. As with striped bass, education and outreach to gain support for the use of circle hooks is definitely needed for these management goals to be achieved. And there's similar enforcement challenges as with striped bass. But again, the hope is anglers adopt the use of circle hooks if they aren't already using them for their conservation benefits for sharks. And states must implement the mandatory circle hook requirements by no later than July 1st of 2020. And finally, with the ASMFC report is spiny dogfish. The Spiny Dogfish Management Board approved Addendum 6 to the Spiny Dogfish FMP. The addendum allows for the commercial quota to be transferred between all regions and states. And the way the quota is set up is the coastwide commercial quota is allocated to the states of Maine through Connecticut as a region. And then from New York to North Carolina, each state gets their own state-specific quota. In order for the northern region to participate in quota transfers, the director of each state's marine fisheries agency must agree to the transfer in writing. They couldn't do this before this addendum. The other point, though, it's important, and this goes with all ASMFC plans when it comes to quota transfers, is transfers among regions and states do not permanently affect the shares of the coastwide quota. And this was very time-sensitive and important because this year's spiny dogfish quota is 46% less than last year. So without the measures approved in Addendum 6, states could run out of quota. And just for reference, North Carolina's share of the coastwide quota this year is 2.88 million pounds. So as a result, the measures are effective immediately and allow transfers to occur during this fishing year. And finally, with spiny dogfish, the board concurred with the Mid-Atlantic Fishery Management Council's decision to recommend no changes to the 2020-2021 spiny dogfish specifications. So not this current year, but the next fishing year will result in a coastwide quota of 23.2 million pounds, which is 13% more than what it is right now. And that will result in a state quota for North Carolina of around 3.26 million pounds. So that concludes the ASMFC report. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Questions? Sam.
Was there any conclusions from the biologists or the managers about weak fish and what they're seeing? If they don't, it didn't seem like fishing was much of a cause for concern.
Yeah, good question. Thanks for that. Total mortality is really what they're looking at right now for measuring, you know, just overall removals and weak fish, and part of that is because fishing is so low because of the regulations, but also because natural mortality has really gone up over the years. They've noticed in the past when the weak fish stock was very abundant, natural mortality wasn't as big a factor, but now it's a much larger factor than fishing mortality, and it's probably a variety of species and reasons as to why that is. But that is acknowledged, and it does make it difficult, you know, as far as management goes. You put in measures and monitor things, but as long as other critters are eating weak fish, we're kind of at the mercy of Mother Nature when it comes to that.
Anybody else? Right. Thank you very much. Appreciate your report.
While you have me up here, I'll go ahead and segue right into Mid-Atlantic, if that's okay.
Mid-Atlantic, okay.
And in your brief material, there's meeting summaries for both the August and October Mid-Atlantic Council meetings. I think there's more things of interest at the October meeting, so I'm just going to cover that if anyone has questions on what happened with Bluefish. The 2019 operational stock assessment for Bluefish determined the stock is overfished, but overfishing isn't occurring.
Hang on one sec.
Where are we in our – I can't find –
We're in the Mid-Atlantic.
Yeah, but
let me see.
Sorry, I'm having a hard time keeping up.
Yeah. Yeah. Screaming and shouting like me. Yep.
Yeah, I messed up the schedule. That wasn't
okay,
Rob.
Went from
and if you will, while you orient yourself over there, Cameron, if I could allow the management council plan updates to sort of complete with Steve going after this for South Atlantic and the HMS with Randy, then I can go ahead and get Carter back up here to talk about what he's here to talk about, because I think that's going to generate more conversation and it'll separate it out a bit. Is that okay?
Okay, the Bluefish stock assessment that was just completed found the stock is overfished. However, overfishing is not occurring, and that's because fishing mortality dipped below the overfishing threshold in 2018. The assessment incorporated the revised recreational harvest estimates into the model, as in addition to including more years of data. And this is also the case for black sea bass and scup when I go over those in just a minute after I finish with Bluefish. So based on the stock assessment results, the Council and ASMOC's Bluefish Management Board recommended a commercial quota of 2.77 million pounds and a recreational harvest limit of 9.48 million pounds in 2020 and 2021. The commercial quota and recreational harvest limit values are based on the commercial recreational allocation that's in the FMP. And the same will go for black sea bass, scup, and summer flounder when I touch on those next. And these quotas for bluefish are substantial reductions compared to what we have right now in 2019. The recreational harvest limit in 2018 exceeded the harvest limit that'll be in place in 2020. So harvest reductions for the recreational bluefish fishery will occur next year. Right now, the monitoring committee is meeting to develop options for the council and board to consider at their December meeting. And I want to just raise that because I think this is the first time in about 20 years there's really been any major changes to recreational bluefish regulations. So that'll be a little different than people are used to. The commercial quota next year of 2.77 million pounds will likely constrain landings for the first time in quite a while. The recreational harvest overage I just referred to prevents the transfer of any unused recreational quota to the commercial fishery. That's been pretty much a standard practice through the FMP over the last few years. So it's going to be, again, a lot of changes coming up with bluefish. On the black sea bass, the 2019 black sea bass operational assessment determined the stock was not overfished and overfishing is not occurring in 2018. Spawning stock biomass was estimated to be about 2.4 times greater than the target biomass target in 2018. Based on the stock assessment results, the Council and ASMFC Summer Flounder, Scup, and Black Sea Bass Management Board recommended a commercial quota of 5.58 million pounds and a recreational harvest limit of 5.81 million pounds in 2020 and 2021. And these are a 59% increase compared to what we have in 2019. The substantial increase in commercial quota, this will result in a substantial increase in commercial quota, but not necessarily an increase in recreational harvest through longer seasons or smaller size limits and things. Due to the revised recreational harvest estimate that was used in the assessment is higher than the current, 5.81 million pound recreational harvest limit. So the recreational measures for the 2020 season will be considered by the board and council at their December meeting, and the monitoring committee this week is meeting to go over some options for that. And on the commercial side, the quota is going up, but it's going up a lot. in a short period of time. And there's some concern by some commercial stakeholders that this large increase in quota could result in some market issues for black sea bass next year. On the SCUP stock assessment determined that stock is not overfished and overfishing is not occurring. The spawning stock biomass is estimated to be about two times greater than the biomass target in 2018. And based on these results, the council and board recommended a commercial quota of 22.23 million pounds and a recreational harvest limit of 6.51 million pounds in 2020. And the commercial quota of just over 18 million pounds and a recreational harvest limit of 5.3 million pounds in 2021. These are small to moderate reductions in quotas compared to 2019. However, the commercial SCUP fishery doesn't catch its entire quota and hasn't done so in a long time. However, the revised recreational harvest estimates for SCUP are considerably higher than the recreational harvest limits that will be in place. So kind of a similar situation with black sea bass. And as a result, the recreational measures for SCUP will be discussed by the council and board at their for next year will be at their board meeting in Annapolis next month. On to summer flounder, which is ironically shorter than what I've just gone over. The council and board received a data update for summer flounder since we just completed the benchmark stock assessment earlier this year. Based on the data update, there no changes are recommended to the specifications. So for 2020 and 2021, the commercial quota is 11.53 million pounds and the recreational harvest limit is 7.69 million pounds. And like with the other species, recreational management measures will be discussed in more detail at the joint meeting next month up in Annapolis. Next item of interest is summer flounder, scup, and black sea bass commercial recreational allocations. The council and board initiated the development of a joint amendment to reevaluate the commercial and recreational sector allocations in the summer flounder, scup, and black sea bass fishery management plan. This action aims to address the allocation-related impacts of the revised recreational harvest estimates. And as I just went over, it was quite evident in the latest assessments for all of these species. The revised recreational harvest estimates are higher than previously thought, which is creating some management challenges with the existing commercial recreational allocations in the plans. So this action is to explore some if we could look at some allocations that could be better aligned with the current landings. The current commercial recreational allocations that we have in the FMPs have been in place for a long time, so it's probably worth taking a look at these anyways. And there will be continued discussion of this topic at the next meeting in December, and I suspect it will go on into 2021 as well. As you know from when we discuss this commercial allocations with summer flounder, allocation issues are usually very long and contentious, so we'll be working on that. And staying on the allocation theme, we also went over the bluefish allocation amendment and bluefish stock rebuilding plan. We received an update on that amendment and revisited the list of issues previously identified for consideration in this amendment. And again, kind of going back to what I just said, the work on this amendment started 2 years ago to look at commercial recreational allocations, the state-by-state commercial allocations, the quota transfer processes in the FMP goals and objectives, and any other issues identified by the public. The council and board reaffirmed their interest in these topics and also to incorporate the stock rebuilding into the amendment as a way to streamline the development and implementation of the rebuilding plan. And this is important because a stock rebuilding plan is required by the Magnuson-Stevens Act for overfished stocks. And the stock will need to be rebuilt to the biomass target within 10 years. Because we're adding this rebuilding plan to the amendment, the council and board will need to provide additional scoping hearings and opportunities for public comment. So keep everyone posted on the development of that. And just because we couldn't get enough talk about allocations, I'll wrap this up with the black sea bass commercial issues addendum, which the ASMFC board initiated an addendum to consider changes to the commercial allocations for black sea bass north of Cape Hatteras. And in the plan, North Carolina gets 11% of the commercial black sea bass quota, and these allocations have been in place since 2003. The action will consider the current distribution and abundance of black sea bass as one of several adjustment factors to achieve a more balanced access to the resource. A variety of allocation strategies being looked at, including status quo, of course, a dynamic approach that gradually shifts allocations over time based on a combination of historic resource utilization and current stock distribution information, trigger-based allocation approaches, a specific method to raise the Connecticut quota to 5% in addition to any other reallocation method, and hybrid approaches that combine multiple options that I just went over. The council deliberated the need for a joint action, but decided to postpone consideration of a joint action until the December meeting. It's a jointly managed FMP, but what's unique with black sea bass is at the ASMFC level, they have state-by-state commercial quotas, but at the federal level, they don't. So right now, this is more of an issue for on the ASMFC side of things, unless the Mid-Atlantic Council wants to also adopt state-by-state options. And that's something that the council decided to discuss in more detail in December. So I know it was a long update, but that concludes what I have for the Mid-Atlantic Council. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Right. Any questions for Chris? Steve, you got a question for Chris?
Yeah, in addition to screwing up the agenda item there because I can't see. So, Chris, did you want to talk about a sustainable plan for American shad, or do you just want to direct people to that in the...
I think we're just going to direct people to that in the briefing materials.
There's a memo.
Any questions, we can answer
those. Yeah, a memo on the sustainable plan for shad, I think page 172. If I can keep indulging here, there is no presentation, just a memo for the highly migratory species update. That's in your meeting materials, but I would like to bring Steve up. And then we'll have Colonel Witten come up to talk about civil penalty process update, and that kind of separates us a little bit because I think y'all want to have some discussion on that. So if there aren't any questions,
you're good.
Thank you. I'd like to call Steve Poland back up to give an update on South Atlantic Fishery Management Council. I believe that's page 190.
Thank you, Chris.
For a second there, I thought you were going to cut me out of the agenda too, Steve, and I wasn't going to complain. Well, good afternoon again.
This is my loyal staff, see?
Well, good afternoon, and to buck Laura's trend, I've brought a hard copy because I know I won't lose that. The South Atlantic Council met the week of September 16th in Charleston, South Carolina. This was our big annual meeting, per se. This is the meeting where typically, if we have new commissioners or anything like that, this is the meeting where, they're sworn in. And also vice chairs and chairs and whatnot. I'm going to just go down the list of the meeting summary. The issues in the summary are out of order of the agenda of how we discussed them at the council, but it really kind of encapsulates everything. So first off, the mackerel committee. I'm not going to touch on the emergency action or Framework Amendment 8 because both those actions only address the southern zone king mackerel management, which is South Carolina through the Florida Keys. Moving on to Atlantic Spanish mackerel, the council reviewed a staff white paper and approved development of a framework amendment to revise the Spanish mackerel accountability measures. Basically, what this does, if approved, the accountability measures for the commercial sector for Spanish mackerel would be that there would be no closure once the commercial quota is reached. The trip limit would just drop down to 500 pounds. There was a lot of discussion at the council meeting about this, and this was really in response to abnormally early commercial closures the last 3 years in the Atlantic Spanish mackerel fishery, and the fact that the southern zone is managed very differently than the northern zone. So there was a lot of discussion and an intent from the council to at least try to mirror management of Atlantic migratory mackerel with the southern zone mackerel. And the intent is for this just to be a short-term measure, more of a stopgap measure until the next assessment's completed and we have a full discussion on allocation of Spanish mackerel between the northern and southern zone for both commercial and recreational sectors. The council also felt that if they were going to back off the accountability measures, they also needed to address the commercial trip limits, so they also included an action to consider dropping the commercial trip limit from 3,500 pounds and requested staff to analyze a range of options from 1,500 pounds up to 3,500 pounds. We also made a motion to add two additional seats to the mackerel advisory panel, and this was really in response from Northern Zone states providing us comments to the effect that they felt like they didn't have much representation on the AP and these early closures the last 3 years. They felt like it disproportionately affected them, and they wanted a seat at the table. So we obliged and added two seats to that AP, and we'll be making those selections at our next meeting in December. Moving on to Snapper Grouper Committee, we reviewed abbreviated Framework Amendment 3. This is for South Atlantic Blue Line Tilefish, and this is for this action really just focuses on the tilefish ACL from Hatteras to the North Carolina-Virginia line. North of North Carolina, blue line tilefish are managed by the Mid-Atlantic Council, and this is just an action to set a consistent ABC and ACL for blue line tilefish from the Virginia line all the way through the South Atlantic Council. At right now, there's a different ACL south of Hatteras, and then a subsection from Hatteras north to Virginia. So this would increase the ACL and make that ACL consistent throughout South Atlantic region. All right, Regulatory Amendment 33. This is the red snapper season modification. The council decided to move forward with only two options. The first option is to remove the minimum number of days to have a recreational red snapper season. So Reg Amendment or Snapper Grouper Amendment 43, I believe, set the current management strategy for American Red Snapper, where the service determines how many days the South Atlantic can open Red Snapper based on previous year's catch rates. But in that management strategy, if the service determines that based off of that catch rate, we get 3 days or less, then the season would not open. So this action is to remove that minimum 3 days. So there is the potential we could have as low as a one-day red snapper season if we approve this action. The other action is to modify the commercial season. There was some interest from commercial fishermen to bump the start of the season up to May as opposed to July 1st. The council received very little public input, both commercial and recreational, on these actions, and we're set to approve the amendment for formal review at the December meeting. All right, moving on. Snapper Grouper Regulatory Amendment 29. This is our best fishing practices amendment. This amendment has four actions. The first one is to require descending devices be on board any recreational, commercial, and for-hire vessel in the South Atlantic that lands or is in possession of snapper grouper species. We've worked on this now for close to 2 years. The council was working on it even before I got on the council. We spent a lot of time at this last meeting debating on the appropriate definition of a descending device. The council wanted to make sure that whatever definition is codified in the CFR through the final rule allows for some flexibility for fishermen to develop their own devices that work for, you know, their specific needs, but we also wanted to make sure that there was a restrictive enough definition that these devices would actually work. The text of that definition is in the summary. The second action in Reg Amendment 29 is to require the use of non-offset, non-stainless steel circle hooks when using hook and line gear and natural baits in the entirety of the EEZ north of 28 degrees latitude. And this is roughly Cape Canaveral, Florida. The South Atlantic Council already has a circle hook requirement. This just further solidifies that requirement and requires that they be non-stainless steel circle hooks. So the intent is that if a hook is left in a fish, that it will corrode out pretty quickly. Action three is to require the use of non-stainless steel circle hooks in the entirety of the South Atlantic EEZ. So this is to cover that region south of 28 degrees, right there around Cape Canaveral. And then the last is to allow power heads in the EEZ off of South Carolina, and this was just a request by South Carolina to have consistent snapper grouper regulations off their state. Some years ago, they prohibited the use of power heads off their coast. And we took final action on that this past meeting. Steve mentioned earlier in the meeting the bureaucracy of the federal government. So we've got some actions that are hanging out there for over a year now where we don't have final rules. So I really can't give a timeline of when these might be implemented.
One quick question, just out of curiosity. On the descending devices, has much work been done on how effective they are or how much mortality there is given the handling it takes to get the fish into the device?
A considerable amount of work has been done, and a considerable amount of work is still occurring. The council, I want to say 7 or 8 years ago, approved a similar action to require venting devices or venting tools to be used, or at least on board, and the service disallowed that action in the final rule, stating National Standards 2, there wasn't enough scientific support on that. And since then, that's really spurred a lot of research, not only in venting, but descending devices. Not every species in the snapper grouper complex has had a study that's evaluated the effectiveness of descending devices, but for some of your like top-tier species, like red snapper, gag grouper, even some of your deep water species like scamp and snowies, and of course black sea bass, which is the number one caught fish in the complex, where discards outnumber total harvest of any snapper grouper species. So those species have been evaluated for the effectiveness, and it shows that descending devices that can quickly descend fish back down to depth and assist in recompression, that you do see higher survival. It doesn't necessarily negate all the effects of barotrauma. There's still some internal traumas that the fish might recompress and swim off, but delayed mortality 2-3 even 4 weeks later due to that internal trauma. I know there was a study out of Florida, was published this past year, that showed for gray triggerfish that the internal trauma from barotrauma, where the stomach would get caught on the gill rakers and the gills, even descended and vented fish, they didn't see much of a benefit of venting or descending, just because that trauma was so great. So, I mean, it's not a silver bullet approach for all the species, and it certainly doesn't create this panacea of catch and release fishing. But it certainly helps. But to answer your question, yes, not all the species, but there have been quite a few species in the complex that have been evaluated for their effectiveness. All right. All right, that was Reg 29.
Hold on, thank camera got.
Oh, sorry.
Good. Okay, go ahead.
All right. Next, snapper grouper regulatory amendment 34. This is the amendment that's the action is to establish SMZs around the artificial reefs in North Carolina and South Carolina. out in the EZ for North Carolina. It would be all of our artificial reefs outside of the 3-mile line. It's approximately 30 reefs, and then South Carolina is adding 4 additional reefs. They already have SMZ status around most of their reefs in federal waters and some in state waters in South Carolina. This was a request that Steve Murphy and the division made to the council some time ago. We've discussed this twice at the council. We've developed a document. This went out for scoping 3 weeks ago. We had 3 scoping hearings, one in Manio, one in Morehead City, and one in Wilmington, where we received public comment. The intent of this action is to designate the permitted boundaries around these artificial reefs as SMZs and then restrict the use of any gear, or restrict the use of gears other than hook and line and spearfishing gear. So this effectively removes trawls, nets, all that out of the permitted area around these artificial reefs. We're going to review the scoping comments in 3 weeks at the meeting in Wilmington and select preferred alternatives and then take the action up again in March for formal public hearings.
Steve, is that going to allow for bang sticks if it allow for spear fishing?
No, just spear fishing just gear, spear fishing no gear. Power heads.
And this comes out of the snapper grouper plan with the supplement council. So it really only applies to snapper grouper species.
Yeah, and that's a good point, Steve. This is a mechanism that the council has through their snapper grouper plan, and it would only affect anglers who are in possession of snapper grouper species on these artificial reefs. It will not affect other council-managed fisheries like coastal migratory pelagics, so king and Spanish mackerel, and cobia and others. So, well, not cobia because ASNFC has cobia now. We got rid of that problem, so...
And I just want to add at that point, so the reason I requested Steve take this forward in the offshore waters is there's a process in place to designate special management zones through the South Atlantic Council as well as Mid-Atlantic Council, just different species groups. But it is fairly common in the southeastern states. And it doesn't, you know, prevent a commercial fisherman from going out and hook and lining grouper or black sea bass, but it would prevent highly efficient gears like pots to be used. And so artificial reefs, although they're built with taxpayer money, Wallet Bro money, various funds, Cruffle money, they've been built with various funds over the years. They are very small patches of highly productive habitat, and you can argue whether they're aggregators or producers or start as one and become another, and that's kind of an old argument, but they are easily it's easy to overfish them with highly efficient gear. So so I think you know, we're really interested to hear what the public has to say. Ultimately, this is going to be a call for the South Atlantic Council and for National Marine Fisheries to make that call as well. They have been successful in South Carolina. You will hear the argument here that, you know, there may be an enforcement issue, and that's true with a lot of things that we do, but we do have federal counterparts that can provide enforcement as well. And I think it's a good conservation measure moving forward on these reefs. So, but we'll see how it comes out. My intent would be, if I still have this job, is to, if we are successful in the offshore component of that, then to bring back a recommendation on the nearshore component for the commission, because that would be within your, sphere of influence at that point. So.
Yeah, thank you, Stephen. Not to belabor it too much more, but you know, Steve hit the nail on the head. The intent of this mechanism in the council's plan is really more of a resource access issue. So not to reduce access to one user group because efficient gears are allowed in that resource. If these areas are aggregating areas, you know, can come in and remove that resource, and then there will not be access. And the action is specific on the gear. It's not prohibiting commercial or recreational harvest off of these sites. It's just limiting the types of gears that can be used on this site. This will go out again for formal public hearing. So if the commission feels that they want to comment on this, there will be an opportunity in the future. So. All right. Moving on, the Joint Golden Crab Habitat and Ecosystem and Shrimp Committee met. And I point this out because, you know, we don't have a golden crab fishery, you know, here off of North Carolina, but there is an action in the shrimp plan that may affect some shrimpers here in North Carolina. So there was a provision, a transiting provision included in the South Atlantic's current shrimp plan that requires vessels transiting in an area that has been closed due to cold stuns or cold weather closures of shrimp, that their gear should be stowed underneath. Shrimpers from South Carolina and Georgia brought this issue to us a couple meetings ago and said due to changes in the way that fishery operates and the types of gears, they can no longer fit their doors under deck, and they wanted to modify this transiting provision to allow them to stow their doors on deck. And I bring this up because there might be a few shrimpers, you know, in North Carolina, they might transit through these areas in the wintertime. So there might be some indirect effect there. The council decided to remove that action from this joint amendment and make that a standalone action. So we could go ahead and take final action on this because this is something that shrimpers in Georgia and South Carolina especially feel like it's a time-sensitive issue. So we're trying to accommodate that. All right, moving on, Dolphin Wahoo, Amendment 10. This is a beast of an amendment. We're currently at 17 actions, and it will not surprise me if we add another action or two at the next meeting. That seems to be par for the course for us. But this is a comprehensive amendment for the Dolphin Wahoo plan. This is really the first time the council has gone back and looked at the plan, you know, from start to finish, goals and objectives, framework actions, that kind of stuff. So this plan is really capturing everything from redefining what optimal yield is in the Dolphin Wahoo fishery down to adding some specific requirements for the Dolphin Longline fishery. So they mirror the HMS requirements and to accommodate a request by Mid-Atlantic and New England to allow filleting of sea of dolphin because the South Atlantic Council has or is the lead council on management of Dolphin Wahoo from the Keys through Maine. And because we are the lead council on it, management measures that we put in place affect the fisheries in Mid-Atlantic and New England. Really want to point out for this one a couple actions that will have some direct impact to fishermen here in North Carolina. There is an action that is looking at modifying the recreational vessel limit for a dolphin. Right now it's currently 10 per person up to 60 per vessel. There's a alternative added to drop that down to 40, and an additional alternative to look at vessel limit modifications anywhere from 60 down to 40, and also an alternative to exclude North Carolina from that. So we still haven't sent this action out even for scoping, but we've already received some public comment from anglers in North Carolina not in support of any adjustment to the vessel limit for dolphin. So just putting that out there, making you guys aware. Also, a modification to the allowable gears in the fishery. There's some anglers out of Florida that would like to add buoy gear as an allowable gear in the dolphin fishery. And we've had a lot of discussions on the record as far as what is the intent. Do they intend of targeting dolphin with buoy gear or just adding buoy gear to the list of allowable gears so that they can retain dolphin when that gear is on board? The last meeting, the stated intent was to not target with buoy gear, just be able to retain maybe a small commercial limit of dolphin when that gear is on board. And if you're not familiar with buoy gear, it's basically a buoy with a gang line and multiple hooks off of it. It kind of fishes like a, you could say, a vertical long line or a trot line or something like that, but it's fishing out in, you know, very deep water, 500, 600, 700 fathom water. And I think a lot of times when fishermen are fishing this gear, they'll set a couple and they'll move around and they'll come up to a buoy and there'll be, you know, some gaffers or something around it, and they want to catch those fish and retain them. Right now, since it's not an allowable gear in the fishery, they can't do that. So, all right. Moving on, in Dolphin Wahoo, Amendment 12, this is adding bullet and frigate mackerel as an ecosystem component species. This is really the South Atlantic Council's first foray into forage fish management. We took up this issue as a request from the Mid-Atlantic. They had just completed their forage fish amendment. And they intended to include bullet and frigate mackerel, but the service disallowed that, citing that there was no direct connection of bullet and frigate mackerel to the diets of any mid-Atlantic managed species. So they asked the South Atlantic Council to consider it, since there is pretty strong evidence that bullet and frigate mackerel are important for Wahoo. We decided to move forward with just one action, and that action is just to identify bullet and frigate mackerel as ecosystem component species. And at this time, we're not moving forward with any additional actions, but they're still on the table for discussion. All right, we received an update on my fish count. And my fish count is a voluntary recreational reporting app that the council has developed about 3 years ago, and is really encouraging anglers to use. It's a way for recreational anglers to report their catch as well as their discards, just to improve data collection on a lot of our managed species. And I bring this up because at the next council meeting, we're going to discuss or begin to discuss potential mandatory reporting in the recreational fishery. The council has discussed that in the past, and they decided to put it to bed for a while they worked on other things. And now that we've got some things off our plate, we're bringing that up, and especially in the context of the new MRIP landings and higher uncertainty, management uncertainty, and just general public uncertainty in those. This has really brought this issue back up. All right. For higher recreational reporting, I just want to update you all on this. The council moved forward with mandatory for hire logbooks in the South Atlantic fishery. We took final action. The council took final action on that March 4, 2017, with a requested implementation by January 1, 2018. But again, referring back to Steve's earlier comment about the federal government bureaucracy, the final rule still hasn't published, and the service assures us that it is being reviewed. So we still do not have a definite implementation timeline for that. And just to close out with a few kind of lighter things, the division, or the council, excuse me, selected their next executive director. Greg Waugh is retiring. His last meeting will be the December meeting in Wilmington, and the South Atlantic Council selected John Carmichael to take over as executive director after Greg Waugh left. John Carmichael, he's got a pedigree that has some North Carolina influence. I think he went to grad school here in North Carolina, and he also worked for the division for 7 or 8 years. He was our stock assessment scientist for a while. and I can't remember how long ago. I think he told me he worked on river herring stock assessment, and he says he still has nightmares on that one. So I don't blame him. And as always, I kind of end on a low note by giving you updates on current closures in the South Atlantic. Start off with commercial. Southeast Regional Office issued a closure for Cobia on September 4th. South Atlantic does not manage Cobia or the Atlantic Migratory Group of Cobia anymore, but this was the last year that the regional office is tracking Cobia landings. Starting in 2020, it'll be ASMSC's responsibility to track landings and close that fishery. Red Snapper Commercial closed August 30th. Commercial gray triggerfish closed October 27th. Vermilion snapper, it did not close, but the trip limit was reduced on November 11th last week, and it was reduced to 500 pounds. So for vermilion snapper, when the quota reaches 75%, the trip limit's reduced just to kind of squeeze a few more days out of that fishery. Spanish mackerel closed August 24th. For the wreck side, the Jack's complex closed September 25th, and this is considered, often referred to as the other Jack complex, so Almacos, banded rudderfish, and lesser amberjack. And Red Grouper closed on the same day, September 25th. Our next meeting is in Wilmington the week of December 2nd. This is our North Carolina meeting that we're hosting, so please, if you're in the area, stop by. Just a few items of relevance to us. Spanish mackerel, we'll continue that discussion of accountability measures. Dolphin wahoo, again, vessel limits, and we'll also review ABC recommendations and start the discussion on what the new ACL for dolphin and wahoo should be, since the SSC met last month and provided us ABC recommendations, not only on dolphin wahoo, on all our unassessed stocks, so snapper, grouper, and everything. We'll discuss the SMZ status for our artificial reefs for snapper grouper, discussion on unassessed ABCs, and red snapper management. So with that, I'm done.
A lot of information. Any questions to Steve? Cameron?
Well, maybe I'm mistaken. Wasn't there a transfer of quota at this meeting from the recreational sector related to Spanish mackerel, or am I mistaken?
There was a request by North Carolina to Florida to transfer some commercial allocation or some commercial quota of Spanish mackerel to the northern zone. The intent was to get a few more weeks out of that. Florida did not capitulate to that, saying that, you know, they as well are expecting an early closure. Their commercial season tends to peak a little bit later than ours.
Okay.
There was no recreational quota transfer.
Right.
Okay.
Anything else? No. Thank you very much.
All right.
Steve?
Thank you, Steve. Before I bring Carter up, the HMS update is, we're not going to have a presentation on that, but Randy is here. If anybody has any questions, that's on page 217. We also have informational materials, Red Drum, Southern Flounder, Protected Resources update, dealer report. And I'd like to give a shout out. I think you guys got this in the mail. This is the basically the License and Statistics annual report, known in-house as the Big Book for various obvious reasons. You have a copy. If you'd like a printed copy, just get with Laura or Dana, and we can certainly get you one. This is a tremendous resource. A lot of work by Stephanie and her shop every year goes into this. It's one of the most complete sources of landings and effort data, both on recreational and commercial harvest in North Carolina. So I really want to highlight this. We actually took this book up to fiscal research to provide it to some of the legislative fiscal research staff for their presentations on division budgets when they were giving those presentations to Senate and House committees. And they were so carried away with this, they made little teaser slides out of it, like how many pounds of this were landed then and what's this fish called. And so it is a fantastic resource, but there's a lot of work goes into it. Yes, Mark.
Is that going to appear in our library?
Yeah, I believe
Yep. You should have it in your library. And if you don't, go see Dana, or Dana can come to you.
I think it'd be a separate document.
It will be.
Yep. Okay.
Thank you.
So I'm learning you use your fingers to make the words bigger so you can actually not skip over things and mess everybody up as they're following along. So next up, I'd like to bring Colonel Witten up to the table. After the last commission meeting, Commissioner Boltz put a request in, and the chairman, we have prepared a report on the civil penalty assessment process over the last 10 years. So there's a brief memo on that on page 122, but the report itself starts on page 121. So, Carter?
Mr. Chairman and members of the commission, as you requested, Chairman Bizzle and Commissioner Boltz, I'm here today to give you a brief update of the civil penalty process. I have provided a more detailed report, which is in your briefing book. The Division of Marine Fisheries is authorized to assess civil penalties for the illegal purchase and sale of seafood pursuant to the authority of North Carolina General Statute 143B 289.53. There are two general statutes for which marine fisheries can assess civil penalties. They are 113.169.3 and 168.4. 169.3 is the dealer's license provision, and 168.4 is sale of fish. The Marine Patrol started assessing civil penalties in 2012 and stopped in 2015 when legal counsel notified the Marine Patrol of a decision in the matter of Heater Utilities Incorporated versus the North Carolina Department of Environmental and Natural Resources, which questioned the legality of assessing the same or similar penalties for small violations as for large violations using civil penalty matrix. The Marine Patrol penalty matrix was similar to the one used in that case, and therefore legal counsel advised that we stop assessing civil penalties until the matrix could be properly reviewed and corrected if need be. The Marine Fisheries has finished working with legal counsel on the matter now and hopes to begin assessing civil penalties again starting January the coming year. Any questions?
Yeah. Sorry. So have other components of Diener still issued civil penalties since that decision was made in 2015?
John.
Hey, John Batherson here from DEQ. I'm not aware of that. It could be, but I just don't work closely with those other divisions with their civil penalty programs.
Okay. I should have said I know that they've been issuing civil penalties since that decision. So what's been the five-year delay in redeveloping that matrix to get us a matrix that works? Like, why haven't we done anything?
One of the biggest things is legal counsel for us trying to go through. We had a legal counsel through Department of DOJ, which he switched. Now we actually have our personal legal counsel, John Batherson, and once he came on board, he started the process working with Sean, figuring out why we were told that we couldn't keep assessing. And they've worked through it together, and John hopes to have a matrix in play to start back January 1.
So do we have the existing matrix that we had? Where is that, and what was the problems with the existing matrix?
The existing matrix was similar to the matrix in the Heater case, where you have six statutory factors, and if you have the statute in front of you, I don't know if you do. But there's other factors that the division could consider. And so with that precedent from the Superior Court, we thought that we should look at those factors to see if perhaps it's just those six statutory factors or maybe other factors and how those factors are applied so that, as Colonel Witten said, applying penalties to big violations, small violations, same penalty. We needed to look at that to make sure that we wouldn't run into that problem again.
But did we have that problem, or do we? It was just the possibility of that problem.
I think because the matrix in the heater case was similar to the matrix in that the division was using, that we didn't want to take a chance of another challenge being, you know, put in the Superior Court and then a judge saying, hey, your matrix is bad because it's just like the matrix in the heater case. So I don't know what the other counsel did before I came on board or Sean Meyer's predecessor, but they did identify the issue. We've had several conference calls working together with the division and MFC Council to try and resolve the issue, and I think we're close. We should have something by January.
So we feel good about the civil penalty program getting going again?
From a legal standpoint, I don't have any problem with it.
Yes. As soon as we get a matrix, we will start back assessing civil penalties.
Okay. It feels like we dropped the ball for 5 years on civil penalties and just
And there has been, you know, not to make any excuses, but there have been changes in the division's leadership, changes in DOJ counsel, changes in DEQ counsel, changes in the Marine Patrol leadership. And so the problem was identified and then other priorities subsumed. And we recognize, you know, your request, the email you sent out, and good time to fix it.
Great.
Yep.
Thank you very much.
Before you go, John, is there a statute of limitations, i.e., can we go back and assess civil penalties, not criminal, but civil penalties on pertinent cases over these past 5 years?
That's something I'd probably want to discuss with Sean and, you know, the optics of that, I'm not sure, but we certainly could talk about it and see.
I'd like for y'all to have that discussion. I don't want to give anybody a free pass if they were knowingly
right.
breaking the law, and so it'd be good.
I have one.
Hold on.
One quick clarification. You mentioned that as soon as you get a matrix, so that we're still in the process of developing the matrix?
It's in draft. The existing matrix, we're running it through our folks, and we'll go through the DOJ folks, and just going to make sure that we don't run into the same problems that arose as a result of this case that came down a while back.
So we're still developing it?
I wouldn't say we're still developing it. It's in a review.
Okay.
And we're getting there.
Okay, thank you. Yep. Thank you.
Everybody good on this? Okay, great. Thank you all very much.
Mr. Chairman, that wraps up my director's report. Unless anyone has any other questions, we can move on to the next agenda item.
Okay, any other questions for the director?
Again, apologies for messing up the schedule there.
That's all right. We'll overlook you. Okay, let's go ahead. We haven't been here for a little bit over an hour. We'll keep on going. Let's do our update on the act to provide further support to the shellfish aquaculture industry in North Carolina. Jacob,